The following talk was given by Bear Gokhan Bonabakar at Zen Mountain Monastery. Gokhan is a senior monastic and dharma holder in the Mountains and Rivers Order. He serves as Director of Operations at Zen Mountain Monastery and also helps run the National Buddhist Prison Sangha. This talk, like all of our talks, is given free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. A quiet, intimate morning here. The Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and take a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, it's covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. Most people can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window beneath the green pines. Jade palaces and vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag, here and now. So this song, this practice, song of practice, realization, was offered to us by Shi Tao, who lived in the 8th century in China. Some of you will recognize this. I gave a talk using this teaching a few weeks ago, and already at that time knew I had more talks coming. And after that talk, someone kind of challenged me a bit, asked a question, said, how is that helpful? How does this teaching relate to my life? How is it helpful to me? And that hurt my feelings a little bit, but also made me reflect. That's kind of stayed with me. How are we to use these ancient teachings that are passed down to us, that our tradition offers us? From the beginning, Buddhism asks some fundamental questions, kind of offers us questions to ask. What should we do with this life? How shall we use this life that we have? This precious, uncertain life, and invites us to look closely at each part of this life. How shall I use my mind? Where shall I place my attention? How about my speech, my actions, my work? The teachings ask us to place careful attention on our relationships, with things, with other beings, with ourselves. What's happening there? Are we doing good in the world? And Buddhism asks us to pay careful attention to some basic truths. We're all going to die. Life is uncertain. We don't know. We don't know. Things are always changing. And actions have an effect. And a lot of the time, we have to pay careful attention to these facts. Or maybe a lot of the time, we don't pay careful attention to these facts. We all know that we're going to die. But it's kind of abstract, most of the time, for most of us. But sometimes, something happens. We have a brush with death. And then it's real. We know. We know. Maybe we know for a while, and it fades again. Life has always been uncertain. And then there are times when that becomes clear, when that is sort of more obvious to us. That may be true for you now, in these uncertain times. Things changing, things which may have seemed reliable, changing. Maybe to allow that uncertainty to sharpen these questions. How shall we use our life, this life, my life? Most of the teachings of the tradition are from times and places different than ours, from people who lived lives who were in significant ways very different than ours. From that place, how do they speak to us? In meeting the teachings, there can be, needs to be, a kind of back and forth between us and the teachings. We reach out and enter the teachings. We allow the teachings to enter us, to kind of reach in and enter us, which means that we have to open ourselves enough that we can let them in. I think this is something we have to learn, we have to practice. How do we open ourselves to let the teachings in, allow them in? The teachings contain ideas, and the teachings are not ideas. They're pointing to the truth of mind, of our mind. They're an expression of how things are, not an idea about how things are. And there's a tradition, a practice of taking the teachings in and reflecting on them, thinking about them. This is a way of taking them in, of letting them enter us, letting them work on us as we work with them. There's a practice, a tradition of testing the teachings to verify them for ourselves. But to do this, we have to let them in. And this has always been the way. Sher Tao says, meet the ancestral teachers, be familiar with their instruction. In the 8th century, he said that. And he says, they are all to help free you from obstructions. I sometimes think of the teachings as practice teachings. Again, because the point of them is not their ideaness. They are to help us free ourselves from obstructions. What does that mean? What are these obstructions? What are they obstructing? Shirtau again. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and take a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, it's covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. Most people can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window beneath the green pines, jade palaces and vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations, are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. You could ask, is it about the grass hut? The specifics of the story of this poem. Could be. There are things that we can take from the story of this poem, the specifics of this poem, the simplicity. We make things so much more complicated than they need to be. In our mind, all that we create in our mind, the habit of turning, worrying, creating, planning. I've been sick all week with the flu, and a lot of the time I didn't have the energy to do anything. I was just lying with my eyes closed. I couldn't read, couldn't really concentrate. A couple hours on the couch, a couple hours on the bed, back to the couch. But watching my mind as I lay there, watching how it would reach out over and over again to create something, to give me a little entertainment, kind of keep me company, comfort somehow. And just seeing that and the kind of over and overness of it. And at some point in the week, kind of seeing that's okay, and I'm okay without it. I'm okay without it. It is not necessary, this turning, creating, reaching out. I talked in my last talk about relaxing, how that is in this poem, encouragement to relax, an example of relaxing. Related, I think. How do we relax in our mind? Why is it so hard to seems so hard for us to really relax, our habitual not relaxing. There is simplicity in our minds, allowing that, and simplicity in our lives. This hermit in this poem, living so simply and joyfully in that simplicity. Can we learn from that? Many of us have so much, so many things. What do they do for us? What do we actually need? There are things that we need. There was a labor movement that called, or their slogan was, bread and roses. We need bread, we need food, and we need beauty. There are things that we need. I think today we need, well, always we need contact, human contact, community, contact with things, to take care of things. We can always ask, what is actually helpful? What is actually leading to happiness? Another really helpful question that Buddhism asks, offers us. Because it's hard to see sometimes with things, with our accumulations. It's hard to see, is that helpful actually? There's some deep conditioning, habit, hard to see through. In reading this poem about this hermit life, there is the example, the possibility, there are other ways to live. There are other ways to live. Not just that there is that way to live. Most of us, many of us, none of us probably will live that life. I sometimes think I would like to be a hermit, but that's not my life. Right? Those of us living here, fairly simple monastic life, it is not a hermit life. But just this fact, there are other ways to live. I always appreciated that when I was not living here and did not think I wanted to be a monk and was asking, what do I do with my life? What shall I do with my life? This example, this fact of people living here in this different way just showed me there are other ways to live. It's hard to see through all of the... It's sometimes hard, I think, to see that there are other ways. There is some deep conditioning, some deep, strong messages that we get. There is the example in the poem of this practitioner's dedication to practice, complete dedication to practice. We can be inspired by the example of others. It's been important for me, both from my teachers, people I have practiced with in person, and from reading like this about the practice of others. There was a time when I was not happy in my life here, and I was, I can't remember what I was reading, but I read something about monasteries, current contemporary monasteries in Korea. And for a while I thought, I should go to Korea. That's where I'm going to find what I'm looking for. But turned that to see, no, so if I'm inspired by how they are practicing, how can I do that here? I can do that here. Not in the same way, but let me do that here in my life. So not to live like this hermit, But how can we practice as he does? Can we be inspired by his example? And to listen closely, what is he pointing to? How about this undying person in the hut? Who is that? He is saying something, there is something to realize, inviting us. Would you like to know? So how do we use these ancient teachings? Allow ourselves to be turned. We have to allow ourselves to be turned if we want to. If we want to use them, if we want to find our way in. That is their point. It is not their ideaness. So what is this old man in the hut doing? I've been drawn to this line, in 10 square feet an old man illumines forms and their nature. What is it to illumine forms and their nature? The Buddha taught that all suffering comes from greed and anger and ignorance, which I think really he could have said, it all comes from ignorance, from a misunderstanding of how things actually are, forms and their nature. Because we would not grasp desire, get caught in all of our wanting, if we understood there was nothing to grasp. We would not have such aversions if we understood the nature of the things that we fear, turn from, try so hard to avoid. There are forms that appear outside of the mind, cups and bowls and people and cars, snow shovels. And when we make contact with particular forms, maybe particularly in particular situations, we have particular reactions. We have our own particular reactions. Whole worlds created. What's happening? What's happening? And they're forms that appear in the mind. A thought arises. Where does it come from? And other thoughts follow. We react to thoughts. Feelings come along and join the party. Whole worlds are created. What's happening? A story someone reminded me about last week, which I think has to do with illuminating forms in their nature. Illuminating. This was some years ago. I was living here. I was in charge of maintenance. It's been a big part of my life here. Working outside a lot. And there was a young fellow who was here for a few weeks. And he was also assigned to work outside. And so he was sort of up and down and maybe living in one of the cabins. And I was out and about. And I kept finding these crumpled up candy wrappers, Starburst wrappers, on the ground. And I knew they were from this young fella. And I was really irritated. You're not supposed to be eating candy on schedule. Shouldn't be littering on the monastery property, sloppy. Each time I saw one, I would have this reaction. My body, start down here. Thoughts, words come out of my mouth. And this happened for a little while. And then one day, over a meal, I kind of called him out on it. In front of other people, other residents. I'm sure there was some energy in what I said. Pretty clear, my irritation. And the next day or a couple of days later, I opened my locker and there was a crumpled up Starburst wrapper in the locker. And the same reaction started. And a little later, one of the other residents said, "Hey, Gokhan, did you find something in your locker?" Big smile on his face. Different resident. And it was very interesting. It taught me something. It showed me something. What was happening? What was I reacting to? What was happening? What is it to illuminate a habit, a tendency? What are we creating? What is being created? In the retreat last week, Further Steps Retreat, we spent some time talking about the kleshas, which are our difficult, binding, obscuring, habitual emotions, they're usually called, understood as. And so desire, anger, jealousy, arrogance, pride. And we spent some time, the people in the retreat spent some time in breakout groups discussing their experience of these difficult emotions. Where do they find them in their experience? How do they work with them? And then when we were hearing back from some of the groups, one of the groups was sharing that sort of their realization was that, or what they had in their conversation kind of come to understand was that these kleshas weren't their fault. They weren't their fault. And I had a little bit of, I was like, wait, what? We talked about that a little bit. It's a helpful understanding. We don't need to blame ourselves, sort of compound the complications by blaming ourselves for having these strong emotions, these habitual reactions. Because there's a way in which, as a friend of mine says, we come by them honestly. We learn them, we're taught them, we're conditioned. We're taught to accumulate, to compete, to compare, to react in particular ways. We learn and we then develop it ourselves. And so that can be a helpful understanding. They're not our fault when we get caught in a habitual reaction. You don't need to, as I said, complicate that further, bind yourself further. But we are responsible. We are responsible. The Buddha said, "I am the owner of my actions, my karma. I am the heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and have my actions as my arbitrator. Whatever I do for good or for evil, to that will I fall heir." We are responsible for our actions, for what we create. And it's interesting, looking again at this well-known teaching, as the Buddha says, he says this is a fact, and he says this is a fact that we should reflect on. He says we should reflect on this fact that I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, born of my actions, related through my actions, and have my actions as my arbitrator. We should reflect that whatever I do, for good or for evil, to that I will fall heir. There are beings who conduct themselves in a bad way, in body, in speech, and in mind. But when they often reflect on that fact, when they reflect on that fact that bad conduct in bad body, speech, and mind, when they often reflect on that fact, that bad conduct in body, speech, and mind will either be entirely abandoned or will grow weaker. I just thought that was interesting how he expresses this as this declarative fact. If we reflect, we will change our habits. Maybe a very early example of what I was trying to say about letting the teachings in, how if we really let them work, kind of take them seriously, then, and meld with them. What does he mean to reflect? Often. And so, to understand in this teaching how we are creating our own lives, we are constantly creating our own lives. And so, what do we want to create? What should we do with this life? Sure, tell one more time. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and take a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in. It's covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, he doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, he doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 square feet, an old man illumines forms and their nature. A great vehicle bodhisattva trusts without doubt. Most people can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present, not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window beneath the green pines, jade palaces and vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, he no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Turn around the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Bind grasses to build a hut, and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk, innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstructions. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.